Okay, so we're on Daf Tetvav today. I'll begin a few lines from the bottom. If you remember yesterday's Daf, we spoke about the machloket. I just reviewed the machloket between Beit Hillel and Beit Shammai about Sarot of Erevah. So in the Mishnah, we learned there are 15 arayot that block you off from Yibam and Chalitza. And then the Gemara says, the Mishnah says, which follows Beit Hillel, that the Sarot are also not subject to Yibam and Chalitza. The Erevah and the Sarot of the Erevah also. But Beit Shammai, we saw in the last Mishnah that we looked at, which was the Mishnah actually on Sunday in Daf Yud Gimel. So it says that Beit Shammai disagrees. They hold that Tzaros of the Erva are eligible for Yibam and Chalitza. So this creates a whole difficulty because, and we said that according to Beit Hillel, so according to Beit Shammai, if someone does Yibam with the Tzara, so they're doing the mitzvah, but according to Beit Hillel, the offspring would be Mamzerim. And according to Beit Shammai, if a woman goes off, which Beit Hillel says they could do, and they just marry, so they're over on this lav of Lotia, and then there's a pagam on the offspring, a taint on the offspring. So the Gemara wasn't sure. We had a machloket between Reish Lakish and Rabbi Yochanan, and between Rabbi Shmuel, whether indeed Beit Shammai had ever followed their own shitot. It could be that it's just like Rabbi Leibowitz was saying, it's just like the base matter, it's just a scholastic idea, but perhaps Beit Shammai never even followed their shitot. In which case there's no problem. So the Gemara is trying to be Mavarer, with prove that they did follow their own sheet. So let's take a look. We're at the bottom of Yudalim and Bays, around six lines from the bottom or five lines from the bottom. So Tashma, the Gemara tries to bring proof from the following Brisa that Beit Shammai did indeed follow their own sheet. The Amar Rabbi Yochanan ben Nuri, Rabbi Yochanan ben Nuri says, Heach halachazu rovecha b'Yisrael. How can we disseminate this halacha concerning the sarot among the Jewish people? If we tell people to follow Beit Shammai, but the offspring are going to be mamzerim according to Beit Hillel, they do like Beit Shammai, then the offspring will be mamzerim according to Beit Hillel. So he says, if people do like Beit Hillel, which means that the Tzaros can just go and marry, so the Vlad will be tainted according to Beit Shammai. So Bona talking and Sarot, so Rabbi Yochanan Nuri suggested, I have a solution, we can resolve this issue once and for all. Bona talking and Sarot, we're going to make a takana for the Tzara of the co-wives, we'll tell in every situation like this, we'll have the Tzara do Chalitza. So then if they don't do Yibam, there's no Mamzeris problem, and then they'll marry somebody, but they'll do Chalitza ahead of time. So every eventuality is taken care of. So we'll tell them, just do Chalitza and Gamarnu, and then we're out of this situation. So the Brisa says at the top line on Tef Amud Aleph, though we speak with the Gorda Davar, so before they could conclude the matter or promulgate it, somehow it didn't come off. It seems like Menach Shemayim, they blocked them from doing this, and they said in the art school that they wanted to demonstrate Menach Shemayim, the Lacha was like Beit Hillel. So, but the Brisa continues, Amalu Rabbi Shemliel, so Rabbi Shemliel says, to Rabbi Yochanan ben Nuri, manasam letzarot harishonot miata. So if you assume that we're going to, let's say, assume we adopt your plan to do chalitza, but what about the tzarot we think who had already married? What are we going to do with them? So the Gemara says, meaning like they're married, and then we have a whole bunch of mamzerim, if that's the way it's coming. In other words, it sounds like you really want to be kovel halacha like Beis Hillel, but just to sort of be choshesh for Beit Shammai on that level. So now the offspring of those unions, even according to Beit Shammai, we mamzerim on a drabana level. And Beit Shammai sheet come paskin that the tzar can marry anybody. But if we kovel halacha is like Beit Hillel, and you do this whole takana that they should do chalitza, in other words, you want to make this the din. The din drabana will be that everybody has to do chalitza. So what about the tzaros who had married and not done chalitza? So even according to Beit Shammai, then it's going to come out that it's going to be a mamzerus on a drabanan level, because now the chamim are mitakin, they have to do chalitza, not yibum. So the Gemara says, and then that's the way Rabbi Sobolovsky explained it. So on the fourth line in Tef Amud Aleph, so now the Gemara wants to extrapolate from this braisa. So if you assume that Beit Shammai did comport themselves with their own shita, and they were, you know, marrying these tsaras and things like that, so the line makes sense. What are we going to do with these tsaras that are married already, you know, and have kids? Then it makes sense. Eliyamid lo asu. But if you say they never did anything, everybody was conforming with Beit Hillel, my mana says, so what does Rosh Hashanah mean? That what are we going to do? In other words, everybody was doing like Beit Hillel anyway. So the Gemara, so that luchora sounds like a proof that Beit Shammai did do like their own shita. That's what the Gemara wants to say. So the Gemara says on line 6, Amar Benach Bar Yitzchak lo nisprucho letzara atzma. So not necessarily so. It could be that Beit Shammai was comporting themselves with Beit Hillel at all times, but manas letzara atzma, he says umanas hachikamar had a tzara to Beit Hillel le Beit Shammai hechi na'avid lahu. Meaning that, let's say, nobody was doing like Beit Shammai. Everybody was doing like Hillel. So according to Beit Hillel, the Tzaros could remarry. But now you have a rule that they have to do Chalitza. So let's say you had one of these women went off and married somebody before the Chalitza. So now what are they going to, that's what the Gemara means. What are they going to do now, these Tzaros? In other words, it could be that everybody was in conformity with Beit Hillel. And so the Tzaros got married to people without Chalitza or anything like that. Now you're legislating that you have to get Chalitza. So now what are the women, the Tzaros themselves, who had married without Chalitza going to do? Let's take a look. He says, if they do Chalitza, they'll be sort of like repugnant on their husbands. In other words, I'm marrying this woman. She's single. And then all of a sudden, she's doing chalitza with this other guy. And we're celebrating. Yeah, and that's right. And it was like, we're celebrating our fifth wedding anniversary. And she says, assuming, you know, that I'm busy that night, I have to do chalitza. Or that day I'm busy, I have to do chalitza. He says, v'chi tema lima'asan. So you say, well, fine, let them be ma'as on their husbands. That's not the way of the Torah. The Torah is the way of shalom. So that's what it could be that Rosh Hashanah meant. But it's not muchrach from this brisa that Beit Shammai was even following their own shita. Okay, who's got questions, comments, thoughts, anything we did so far? So it means like this, that again, so if a woman is the widow and her husband died, that means that if that is the case, and according to Beit Shammai it is the case, there's a zika, there's a connection between her and the surviving brother. So her remarriage didn't break that zika. In other words, the marriage would be valid, but there's still the zika between her and the other thing. That's what the Gemara is saying. That's what the Gemara is saying, but that would only be according to Beit Shammai. But that's where you need the chalitza. So it's like kind of like, you know, doesn't shtimois with the marriage, you know? Right. So the zika, the zika lechora is a din derabanan, right? All right. Now, who's getting more questions? Anybody questions? Okay, let's go further in the Gemara. Now, who's the front? Okay. What? No. And it was, that's the discussion in the Brisa. In the Brisa, Rabbi Shimon Gamliel says, my Eitza, or Rabbi Yochum Anuri says, my Eitza is we should have the women all do Chalitza. But the Gemara says, so we said that seems like a raya that Beit Shammai was following their Shita. So no, maybe Beit Shammai wasn't following their Shita. But if we follow this enactment, it'll come out that you have Tzaras who had remarried and did Chalitza. Okay, so I'm going on to the next piece of Gemara. Okay, we're around 10 lines down on Tip of Manal. No proof, right? So now we're going to try another proof to show that Beit Shammai did follow their own shita. Okay? So Tashma, the Amrib Tarfon, Ta'avani, Miti, Matai, Tavo, Saradabat, Liadiva, Esa'ena. So Rabbi Tarfon, who's a follower of Beit Shammai, says, Ta'avani means I'm desirous, I can't wait. He says, Matai, Tavo, Saradabat, Liadiva, Esa'ena. That my daughter is married to my brother. Rabbi Tarfon's daughter is married to his brother. He says, I can't wait. And it seems strange that he would say something like this because it means his brother would die. He says, I can't wait till the tzara of my daughter becomes available and then I'll marry her. In other words, so that sounds like that they're conducting themselves like in accordance with Beit Shammai. Rabbi Tarfon is a Talmud of Beit Shammai, a follower of Beit Shammai. So he says, I can't wait till I marry the tzara of my daughter. It sounds like that they're following their shita. let's take a look back in the Gemara. So the Gemara says, so Ema va'asiena. So the Gemara says, don't read the Braisa the Esaena that I will marry her. Ema va'asiena, I will marry her off to someone else. Not that I will marry her, I'll marry her off to somebody else. So then with that word, that's the end of the proof. So the Gemara says, Bahata bani kamar. But he says, like, I'm taiv. It means, like, I'm yearning to do something unusual. But if just marrying her off, that's not out of the ordinary. So the Gemara says, La puki mizur of Yochum and Nuri. In other words, he wanted to say, I'm going to marry her off without chalitza. That's the key. In other words, I'm eager to demonstrate that we're not following Rabbi Yochum and Nuri, and I'll marry her off to somebody without chalitza. So, but there's no proof from there. So again, we tried to bring a proof that they do follow Beit Shammai, and then the proof fell by the wayside. So if you look at the first number line of Rashi, he says Rabbi Tarfon, we tell me de Beit Shammai. Now, if you remember, I was bothered by this, but like Rabbi Sabalasi was pointing out to me, close to ask the question. You know, remember there's a Mishnah Masechet Brachot where Rabbi Tarfon says Ani Eiti Baba Derech Bitei to the Grot to the Beit Shammai. Remember the Mishnah says that according to Beit Shammai. But Erev Kol Chad Yituviyah grew. According to Beit Shammai, in the evening when one recites Shema, you lean over and recline to recite Shema in the evening, and in the morning you stand up because it says B'shach B'chav Kumecha. And Hillel says no, everybody reads Kedarko, so it was B'shach B'chav Kumecha, B'shach Shabbatim Shochim, B'shach Shabbatim Omni, right, the time. So the Mishnah says, Amar Rabbi Tarfon, Anini Tibaba Derech, be paid to the Krok to the Rebbe Shammai. So in the Mishnah, Rabbi Tarfon says, I was traveling, and I was specifically went out of my way to lean over when I was reciting Shema, Vesikanti Batzmi Melissim, and I put myself in danger because of the bandits. And then the Chamer said, Kidai Hit Lachobas Masha Bartha the Rebbe Hillel. Yeah, you deserve it because you were not follow what the Hillel says. So I was thinking that's a good raya. They did follow. And it was the Gemara takes it as not just this issue. Did Beit Shammai people follow their own sheet in general? So there it's pretty mukra. So Tosus asks this question. So he was following. He was a follower of Beit Shammai. So the Gemara says, so the Gemara is going to, so Tosfos says that the Gemara is going to arrive at that conclusion anyway, that they did follow their Shita, but we're not there yet. Okay, let's see where we're going. So, okay, so moving, any questions, comments, or thoughts? I'm moving to the next proof.
Okay. But that was Pekuach Nefesh.
What say again, Aaron Moshe?
I'm saying over there, that was Pekuach Nefesh. You were silly doing, following.
Right, but that's what the Chachamim said back then. Okay, but the point being, though, that he was following Beit Shammai. Okay, let's see further in the Gemara. Now, the 10th narrow line, or the 15th line, Tashma, Masa Bitosh Rabban Gamliel, there was an incident with the daughter of Rabban Gamliel, Shetanesuila Abba Achiv. Seems like a lot of people were marrying their nieces. So Rabban Gamliel had a brother, the brother's name was Abba, and Abba married Rabban Gamliel's daughter. So there was an incident with Bitosh Rabban Gamliel, Shetanesuila Abba Achiv, who made Lobanim, and then Abba died without any children. The Yibin Rabbi Gamliel Tzarato, and Rabbi Gamliel was Yibin the Tzara, the co-wife. So again, so it means his brother Abba had at least two wives, one being the daughter of Gamliel, one somebody else. So after Abba's death, Rabbi Gamliel did Yibin with the Tzara. So that seems like Rabbi Gamliel was following Beit Shammai. That's we got our proof. So the Gemara says, the Tispera, does that make sense? Rabbi Gamliel, me tell me, David Shammai, who? Does it make sense that Rabbi Gamliel would be among Talmid of Beit Shammai? Rabbi Gamliel was a descendant of Hillel. So it's, and in general, the halakha follows Beit Hillel, but it's unlikely that Rabbi Gamliel was a follower of Beit Shammai. Ella, Shani Bitosh Rabbi Gamliel, the island that boy. So, no, the case with the daughter of Rabbi Gamliel, Rabbi Gamliel's daughter was an island. Remember, island is the girl that doesn't develop simanim. So the Mishnah says, remember, we learned the Mishnah on that phase. So the Mishnah says on Daf Beis Amud Beis, it says that this is on the third line on Beis Amud Beis 2b. So this is the Kulan in Meitu Omiyunu and Garsh Unim Shu Ilonit. Any of these Arayot, if they turn out to be an Ilonit, he says Sarotain Mutarot. So Beit Hillel holds the Saros are permissible because the Ilonit, again, we learned the Pshat in the Mishnah. Remember, we learned the Daf last Thursday in Daf Yud Beis. The Pshat, the Gemara says Shinimsu Ilonit. The person going into the marriage didn't realize that the wife was or would become an Ilonit. So it's a mekach taus. So he's not really married. It's like a fraudulent, you know, conveyance, in other words, or transaction that he didn't know what he was getting into. So the so there's no marriage between, you know, Abba and the Ilonit. So there's no marriage with the Ilonit. So the Ilonit's a zero, and only the Sarah is the wife, and that's what he did. So let's see back in the Gemara. So the proof is falling by the wayside with it. So let's see back. So the Gemara says, So the Gemara says, wait, I mean, the Tani Seifa, but in the Seifa of that Brisa, we're going to the Seifa now, Achayr Momrim, others say, which is usually Rabbi Meir, Bitoshur Gamaliel Ilani Haita. So Achayrim, other people say that the daughter of Rabbi Leah was an Ilani. The Gemara says, Bechlal Tanakam Servar Lav Ilani Haita. So if Achayrim, if in the Seifa of the Brisa, Achayrim says that the daughter of Rabbi Leah was an Ilani, means the Tanakhama probably does not hold that she was an Ilani. So in that case, is, you know, Hadar Kushla Dukta. The question goes back to the, where it was. So the Gemara has several explanations. So one shot is that Tanakhama holds that everybody agrees she was an Ilani. Tanakhama says he didn't know going into the marriage she was an Ilani. So that's the end of the marriage. This Acherim hold that he knew from the get-go she was an Ilani. But notwithstanding that he knew from the get-go she was an Ilonit, and the Gemara had a previous limud on Daf Ched, that Ilonit is different than the other Arayot, that Ilonit, remember, she's only like an Erva at the time of the Yibum, but the Ilonit, in other words, she's totally Mufka from the Dinim of Yibum. In other words, she's totally not in the Parsha with Yibum whatsoever. So even if he knew that she was an Ilonit, so she's totally removed from this aspect of Yibam, and the Sarah is permissible. That's one Hesber. That's correct. Correct. Now, wait 3 minutes, and we'll get you, okay? You really agree with Benayu. The Iboidem, or else I could say, Tanasu was so Yireishi to Benayu. That the Nafkamina between the Tanakama and Acherim, Rabbi Meir, is the case where the case the Gemara is changing the fact pattern. That what happened was the brother married Rabbi Gamliel's daughter, then he married the Tzara, so now they're both wedded to him at the same time, and then prior to his death, he divorces Rabbi Gamliel's daughter. Prior to his death, he divorces the daughter, and then he dies. So Yekanas was Sofkirashika Benayu. So the Tanakhama holds that since at the time of his death, he was not married to Rabbi Gamliel's daughter, so all bets are off. In other words, it's true that they were wives at the same time for a period of time, but at the time of his death, he wasn't married to the daughter. So the Tzara is, you know, in the Parsha. The time the Acherim hold, the fact that he divorced her ahead of time is not relevant because in notwithstanding that, she would be the Tzara of an Erva, but she was an Ilonit. And then you could say whatever we want with the Ilonit that he discovered later on or whatever. But she was an Ilonit. That's another pshat. Or a third pshat, the third pshat is that whether we say we can have a tanai in kibushin after it's been followed by intimate relations, meaning that his brother or anybody who marries somebody can stipulate that I'm doing the erusin provided you don't have any mumim. So if afterwards he finds a mum in her, so then the marriage is off. But let's say he then has intimate relations with her. So so according to the Tanakhama, then it's still off. So in other words, so in this case, the daughter of Gamliel, never mind the Ilonit part, I don't know, maybe she had some big scar down her back or something like that that he didn't know about. And he made the stipulation, so it's a mekach taus, so the marriage is revoked. There's no marriage. Not a revoke, it never existed, because it's mekach taus. But the Acherim hold, you can have a tanai, but if you then have relations with the woman, then it's like in law, well, I'm borrowing a term, not exactly for the attorneys among, it's like condonation. Like, in other words, once you have relations with her, it's like you've accepted all the defects that are in her. So that was the case here. The Gemara says that the brother made the stipulation, and then the woman had a defect separate from the Ilonit issue. So according to Tanakhama, so she was out the door because they had the defect. according to the second Tana, Chayrim, yes, she had the defect, but he had relations with her. So then that's a zero. But she turned out to be an Ilonit, and then that would be the revocation for it. Okay, so again, let's just summarize for a minute. So we tried to prove that Rabbi Gamliel was following Beit Shammai and having relations with the tsar of his daughter, and then it came out that the daughter was an Ilonit and then was one of the Shitot, but Mamela, there was no marriage with the daughter at the time, you know, for the in terms of the Yibam so he even according to Beit Hillel, he could marry the tsara, and there's no proof that Beit Shammai followed her own Shita. Okay, who's the questions, comments, thoughts, anything I did so far?
I have a question.
Okay, let me affirm, then I'll get to you, Rafi. Okay, go ahead, Fern.
Wait.
Doesn't this whole story with Rabban Gamliel's daughter make it seem like Rabban Gamliel did something wrong? Or that to create this Mekach Taot with the Ilonit, that they sort of cheated or tried to...
No. Again. So with the Ilonit, it could be that nobody knew she was an Ilonit. In other words, he could have married her at a very young age, and nobody knew that she was going to become an Ilonit. So there's nothing misleading, you know, about that. And remember that they're all in the family. You would think people would know things. But it was
technically, Ilonit is someone who never developed signs, right?
Right, never signed.
So
I'm thinking he could have married her when she was 10 years old, and then it turned out she was an Ilonit.
I mean, if there's such a thing as delayed maturation, how do you ever know someone is an Ilonit until they're at the end of the life?
Yeah, I think, right. So what Yosef was saying, I think the Gemara says when they're, I think, 20, then you know they're an Ilonit or whatever. They're not going to happen anymore. All right. What's up, Rafi? And I'll say what Rafi says in a minute, okay? Here's a suit. An Ilonit can never have kids. That's out of the picture. So when Ilonit is not in the parsha of Yibum, that's what we said. But at the time that he married her, he may not have known that she would become an Ilonit.
The Tanakh also
so what difference does it make? It's nobody's fault. What do you mean? I don't understand. What? No, it's not just. It's not just that she just can't bear a child. She doesn't develop like the way a woman would develop. Okay. All right. I'm going to move on. So you got the gist, I think, when Rafi was asking. He was saying that that why is it the Ilonit's fault that they didn't have kids? But I said Ilonit doesn't develop, you know, physically. Okay. Let's move on in the Gemara. Everybody with me? Okay. So now the Gemara is like shifting gears a little bit and says, we're assuming that Beit Shammai did not follow their own Shitot and comported themselves with Beit Hillel. We tried to prove that Beit Shammai followed their own Shitot. We did have one proof from yesterday's Gemara that Beit Shammai was following their own Shitot. But let's take a look in the Gemara now. So now we're assuming that Beit Shammai is following Beit Hillel. So let's get back in the Gemara. Now we're assuming again that they're not just following their own shita by the tsarot, they're following their own shita, and everywhere there's machlok Beit Hillel, Beit Shammai Lamasa is really following Beit Hillel. So Mati Rav Sharshia, Maasa Rabbi Akiva, Shliket Etrog, Be'achad B'Shvat, B'nai Boshni Yisurim, Echad K'dibri Beit Shammai, Echad K'dibri Beit Hillel. So the first custode is that from Maasa for an Etrog, you go b'shat l'kita, when you harvest it, when you pluck it from the etrog tree. So there was an incident with Rabbi Akiva, who plucked it in etrog, and they said in the Aris was not one etrog, because you don't get into masros with one etrog. He harvested a whole bunch of etrogim, and on the first of Shvat. Now, if you may recall, the first Mishnah in Masechet Rosh Hashanah says there's a machlok between Beit Shammai and Hillel when Rosh Hashanah Lilanot is. Is it the first of Shvat or the 15th of Shvat? Now, this year, it was the second year going into the third year. So whatever the Rosh Hashanah is, before the Rosh Hashanah is going to be the second year of the Shemitah cycle, after Rosh Hashanah, the third year of the Shemitah cycle, in terms of the Masrot. So the second year is Masr Sheni, the third year is Masr Ani. So it says that Rabbi Akiva, you know, harvested these etrogim on the first of Shvat. But, so let me read again. Masri Akiva shliket etrog le'echad b'shvat v'ago shnei yisurim. So he double tithed it. He took Maser Sheni and Maser Ani. It was only one or the other, but he took both. At least that's a simple shot. One to accord with Beit Shammai's Shita. In other words, according to Beit Shammai, it's already the Maser Ani time because it's Rosh Chodesh Shvat. According to Beit Hillel, it's the Maser Sheni time because it was before the 15th. So Shmamina Asu. So that seems like if Rabbi Akiva is taking two masrod, it must be the Rabbi Beit Shammai who's following their own shita, because why is he doing that? If they're not following their own shita, why is he taking two masrod? So the Gemara says, no, Rabbi Akiva Gemari is tapak lei, lo yadli, Beit Hillel b'chav shvat amur, or b'chav shasar b'shvat amur. So he says that Rabbi Akiva was mesupak, and Rabbi Akiva knew it was about Chokmi Beit Shammai Beit Hillel, about the first of shvat and the 15th of shvat, but he couldn't recall whether Beit Hillel said the 15th Shvat or the first of Shvat. So therefore, out of Safek, he did both, but not necessarily that Beit Shammai was even doing their Shita. So we had another proof, but it fell by the wayside. Okay, now, Matit Bar Zutra. So again, we're trying to prove now that, assuming that Beit Shammai follows the Shita of Beit Hillel, we're going to ask Kashas. So Matit Bar Zutra, Masav Yalva Kalatosho Shammai Hazakein. There was an incident with the daughter-in-law of Shammai HaZakein. So we have Hillel and Shammai and Beit Hillel, Beit Shammai. So Shammai HaZakein, like I was speaking to Rafi before the daf, Hillel and Shammai live around 80 BCE. So this is like the original Shammai. So they're like, they're five zugot, like early Tanaim. And Hillel and Shammai are the fifth set of zugot. So he says, then the daughter-in-law of Shammai HaZakein, so his daughter-in-law gave birth, and he, Shammai, you may recall this from Masechet Sukkah, he took the plaster off the roof so that you'd have a scare, you know, open to the sky. He says, V'sikecha gabimita, and he puts tzach over the child, v'shvil katan. Now, there's a machloket in the Gemara Masechet Sukkah, when do you begin chinuch for the child? So Rashi points out, Shammai holds, that's tzarich l'imokai b'sukkah, that even a child that still needs its mother, you should, like, be mechanich him in a sukkah. So shvami na'asu, so that sounds like they're following their own shita. Otherwise, why is he breaking down the ceiling and doing that? They're following their own shita. So the Gemara says, so the Gemara is going to say that Beit Shammai could follow Beit Hillel, but if there's a way to camouflage their shita that nobody would realize they're following their shita, then they would do it. So in other words, if I could do my conduct in a way that nobody would realize I'm really following Beit Shammai, then they would do it. Otherwise, they're following Beit Hillel. So it says, over there, the viewer seeing the child with the hole in the ceiling above it would say, well, maybe he just needs more circulation of air, and that's why he made the hole with the schach, not because he's trying to build a sukkah during Sukkot. So that being the case, there's no raya that Beit Shammai does their own shita. In other words, they do their own shita when they can fact camouflage it. Nobody realizes they're doing their shita, that they do it, but to do it otherwise, they wouldn't do. But only if nobody would realize it. In other words, only where they have this, like, you know, it's camouflaged. Then they would do their own shit. Okay. So Matib Mar, so again, we're getting nowhere with this. We're trying to say that maybe Beit Shammai follows Beit Hillel, but we're asking kashas on it. So Matib Mar Zutra, Masa Bishoket Yehu Shaitab Yushalayim, Vaitanukuv on the Mikvah. So there was like this, Shoket is like a trough, like a stone trough that was filled with water. And next to it is like, or nearby a mikveh, and it's connected by, like a small hole. And we've had this before, hashaka. In other words, the waters touch one another. So the shoket is still good. So the Gemara gets into a topic which we had earlier in Daf Yomi. The Potarot Yerushalayim Nasim Magaba. So everybody, what? Right. So everybody would bring their kalim in Yerushalayim to tavlet in this shoket. He says, "V'shalchu Beit Shammai v'hirkivua," and Beit Shammai set instructions to enlarge the connection between the kosher mikvah and the shoket. So Beit Shammai may mashtibatei beruba. The Shammai, we'll see in a minute. Beit Shammai holds that the wall between the two mikvahs has to be the rove of the wall has to be opened up to the new mikvah. Utnan, we learn the Mishnah in the second chagig. Is that what you said? He's all right, but it looks like Chagiga is where we had this. Okay. Chagiga was last Masechta Moed. Okay. So with Tanan, we learned in the Mishnah. I mean, this Mishnah is a Masechta Mikvaot, but the sugi came up in Chagiga. With Tanan, Eiv Mikvaot to shofer anod, Obi Yolachal Allah, that an Eiv of Mikvaot to connect Mikvaot, a Mikvah with a, like a non kosher Mikvah, and then make it a kosher Mikvah, is to shofer anod, like the tube from the water, you know, container. He says, but Obi Yolachal Allah. In other words, like the width of the tube, but not just the space of the tube, the entire diameter, including like the, you know, the tube itself. He says, which means you need two fingers to easily move around in it. That's according to Beskei Beit Hillel. Beit Shammai holds I need like most of the wall down. So Shlomi Nasu, so from the fact that Beit Shammai sent instructions, he wants you to make a wider opening, it sounds like they're following Beit Shammai. So the Gemara says, Hatam, turn page, top line on Tefillah Beis, Hatam Aroa Omer LaPushi Mayu DeKavik. So there too, it could be camouflaged because the one who sees it could just think that they want to make it easier for the water to come in. And it's like, I don't really want more water or whatever. Not necessarily that it's a dinner mikvot. So it's not mukhrak from there that Beit Shammai was following their own shita where that wasn't the case. Okay, any questions, comments, thoughts, anything we did so far? Okay, let's move on. So on the second line on Ted Vavam and Beis, so Tashma, the Amr Blazer Bar Tzadok, so the El Gemar quotes a Bryce, so Rabbi Blazer Bar Tzadok says, Shagit Lomei Torah Eitzel Rabbi Yochanan Chorani, when I was studying Torah with Rabbi Yochanan Chorani, Reit She'ochel Patcha Reva B'melach B'shnei Batzoret. So it was a time when there was a lack of rain, like famine, and the Rebbe, Rabbi Yochanan Chorani, was eating dry bread and salt. So he's not a good situation financially. Baki Vodati Rabba, I told my father, and it seems the father, Rabbi Lazar Bar Tzadok, it might be, there's a famous Rabbi Tzadok, so I'm not sure if this is it, but he told his father, Amarli, so my father told me, Polech lo zeitim, why don't you bring him these olives in a jug? Bolachti lo, and I brought the olives to him, Ra'otan shin lachem, and he, Rabbi Yochanan Chorani, saw that the olives were damp. They were damp because the olives had oozed out. So he says, so he at that point didn't want to eat it because he was koshesh, that's a heksher, and it was makabel tuma. And he was careful to eat even his chulin in a state of tahara. He says, Amarli, inam yochel zeitim. So he didn't want to say, you know, your zeitim or treif. He says, I don't eat olives, you know, something else. So he says, bati, it's interesting you see, like you know, how Tamidus come and behave, you know, like with the things. So he says, I want olives. So bati vodati rabas, I went back, I told my father, Amarli lecha morlo, go back and tell him, chavit nekuva haita. He says that the chavit in which the olives were in was perforated on the bottom of the container, but the sediment blocked off the holes. Now, if there are holes in the container, that means the person doesn't want the machshirim on it. In other words, it's the machshir is only a machshir if I want the machshir on the fruit. In other words, the olives were like oozing sap. So that's the mashke. So I have to want the mashke on the olives in order to be a mashke. If I don't want it on, it's not a mashir. So if there are holes in the bottom of the container, that means I don't want it because it's all going to go out the hole. So tell him there were holes in the bottom of the container, but the reason they're damp is because the sediments blocked off the holes. Utanan, and we learn the Mishnah Masechet Iduyo, Chavit shel zeitim megulgalim, if you have a chavit, it's like a barrel, but the barrel are like earthenware barrels, and of zeitim that are like soft, Beit Shammai rim ein sricha lena cave. So Beit Shammai says, you don't need to make a hole in it. He says, because, in other words, they hold that the sap, I'm not sure, in other words, whatever comes out of the olives, Beit Shammai doesn't hold as a machshir. Uvehillo rim, Sricha l'nakev. Beit Shammai Hillel holds you need to make the nekev. Umodim, but so Beit Hillel holds you have to have a hole in it. Umodim, but Beit Hillel agrees. Shem nikvo stamua shmarim. If there were holes and the shmarim blocked it off, shehi tahora. But it's tahora. Now he says va'apel. Now again, so Reb Lazar's father Reb Tzadok is telling him go tell him not to worry about the mashkim on it, because it's not a machshir, because there are holes in the keli. But afal pish to talmid shamai haya, because even though Reb Tzadok was a talmid of Shammai, so according to Shammai, b'chlal, it's not a question about the machshirim, because according to Ben Shammai, it's never a machshir, that which oozes from the olive. That's just sap. We don't view that as oil. In other words, olive oil is a machshir, but the sap is not. So he says, Afish Tamid Shamai Haya, this is the Silla Brisa. He says, even though he was a Tamid Shamai, Kuma Savalu Asala to the Rebbe Hillel, he comported himself with the Rebbe Hillel. So now the Gemara, okay, one second now. So the Gemara says, Yamri Bishlimasu. So if you'll say that they followed their Shitod, Hain Revute, so that's his Hiddush. Even though he's Beit Shammai, and normally you follow Beit Shammai, but he wants to, in this case, be Machmir like Beit Hillel. He says, El Yamri Loasu. But if you assume that nobody did like Beit Shammai, even the Beit Shammai didn't, people didn't do like Beit Shammai, they comported themselves with Beit Hillel, my Revute. So what's the Chiddush that the Brisa says that even though he was Tamid Shammai, he did all his masim like Beit Hillel? But everybody's doing like Beit Hillel. In other words, why is he so special? He's doing, everybody's doing like Beit Hillel. So that's a raya that Beit Shammai did like Beit Shammai. All right? So we have one raya that way. We had one raya from yesterday as well. Okay? Okay, any questions, comments, thoughts on anything we did so far? Okay, so no questions. I'm moving forward. Okay? Okay, so around 20 lines down on your Dalin Hip Album Biz. Everybody with me? Okay. So again, so the Gemara is trying to bring proofs that, let me see how he frames it here. I like the transitions in the art score are good. So it's another proof that Beit Shammai followed their own shitot. Okay, so Tashma Shalu Rabbi Yeshua. So the Talmidim asked the Tana Rabbi Yeshua. By the way, you see that Beit Shammai and Hillel. You ask me how long the period goes. So Hillel and Shammai live around 80 BCE. We saw the Rabbi Akiva was after, you know, like his life, you know, continues on after the Korban Beis Hamikdash, and Rabbi Yeshua also, even though he lived a little before, but he also afterwards. So he says Tashma Shalu Rabbi Yeshua. They asked Rabbi Yeshua, Tzarat Habat Mahu, what's the halacha with Tzarat Habat, the co-wife of your daughter? What, we know that this is Machlok Beit Hillel Beit Shammai. What's the halacha? So Amar Lahem, Machlok Beit Shammai Beit Hillel. So he said, it's Machlok. So this is the halacha of the Rami. So who does the halacha follow? So Amar Lahem, Nema Tem Machis and Rashi, Bein Shnei Harim Gedolim. Why are you putting me in the middle of like two big mounds, like in the middle of big Machlok? Bein Shnei Machlok Gedolot, Bein Beit Shammai Beit Hillel. I'm afraid that somebody's going to crack my head in. In other words, according to Beit Shammai, they're allowed to Yibum with the Tzara. And according to Beit Hillel, they can't do Yibum with the Tzara, and all the kids would be Mamzerim. So they're going to come, if I say the Lachas Beit Hillel, I'm going to have all these people, you know, breaking my skull. So he says, and that sounds like a raya that they're following their own sheet. Otherwise, who's afraid of cracking a skull? But I'll tell you, you're asking the question, so I'll give you Edus. There were two big families in Yerushalayim, the family of Beit Tzavoim from Ben Achmai. Sounds like strange names, but this is Mishpacha Beit Kufayim Ben Mekoshesh, Shehim Ben Tzarot. They were the sons of Tzarot, he says, Konim Gedolim. And Konim Gedolim served from them. Vishimshu al Gabe Mizbeach. And they served on the Mizbeach. Now, one second. So it means like this, that these families, the Tzarot had followed Hillel and married, but even Beit Shammai was good with them being Kohanim Gedolim. In other words, according to Shammai, they're violating a law by marrying somebody without doing chalitza. And then we said there's a taint on the offspring, but even Beit Shammai was good with them. So we'll see in a minute. So he says, now the Gemara brings his proof. Yari b'shleim asu, if you assume that Beit Shammai was conducting himself in accordance with their own opinion, hendekamor mityarei ani, so we understand what he says, I'm afraid. I don't want to say Allah is like, I'm going to get killed. He says, el yari lo asu, but if you assume that they never comported themselves with their own opinion, amai kamar mityarei ani, why did he say I'm afraid? So now we assume that Beit Shammai did comport themselves with their own opinion. So now the Gemara says, but all is not finished. When he nami da'asu, so even assuming arguendo that Beit Shammai did in accordance with their own opinion, my mityarei ani. So why was he afraid? And the Gemara is going to explain. Ha'amar Rabbi Yeshua in mamzer mechavi mitor beitin. So Rabbi Yeshua the Shita Toh holds that a mamzer is only a forbidden union that would involve mita, death. Now, relations with your brother's wife is a chiv kare. So according to the Tan Rabbi Yeshua, so even if Rabbi Yeshua says the lach is like Beit Hillel, but Rabbi Yeshua wouldn't be saying the kids are mamzerim, it's just that they're children from a forbidden union, but they're not mamzerim. So the Gemara says, so why was he afraid that they're going to, like, you know, crack in his skull? So the Gemara says, you're right. They, according to Rabbi Yeshua, they're not mamzerim, but they're tainted. There's a pekima in their lineage. Now, when we say pekima, it means that if this woman would marry let's say the Yibam, let's say the husband was a Kohen, so according to some Rishonim, so the offspring would be halal. The offspring would be a halal. In other words, if there was a family of Kohenim, and so the brother-in-law who's doing Yibam is going to be a Shama, you're doing Yibam, so the offspring, if it was a son, boy, would be a halal. But even if the brother-in-law was not a Kohen, it was a non-Kohen, and then they have a daughter, the daughter would be prohibited to marry a Kohen. The daughter would be a halala, and she would be prohibited to marry a Kohen. So let's see what the Gemara. So the Gemara says, "Nihinami." One second, just stand. Halala is usually when you're a Kohen, so I don't know if she's called a halala, but she'd be a psul. She'd be a psul for the Kohen. She'd be a psul for the Kohen. So let's see back on the Gemara. So the Gemara says, "So nihinami the mamzer lavi pagum yuhavi mikavachomer." So it would be pagum based on the following kavachomer. Now, the Gemara doesn't quote the whole Kavachomer because the Gemara is going to have the whole Kavachomer in a few lines. Me'almana. Ma'almana shen yisru no'ei b'chol. Now, an almana, a widow, is not prohibited to, even in the Mishpacha Kuna, almana is only prohibited to a Kohen Gadol. That's the only one in the world that she's prohibited to, is the Kohen Gadol. But they're not pagum. So, but if she marries the Kohen Gadol, the offspring is tainted. So, in other words, she's got a narrow field of disqualification, but if she goes forward, then the offspring is disqualified. Zushi Srosha Bechol, here with the Tzara, so her disqualification extends to all the brothers, whether they're Kohanim or not Kohanim, according to Beis Hillel. In other words, according to Beit Shammai, they could do the Yibam, but according to Beis Hillel, they can't. So the widow is prohibited on all the brothers, whether they're Kohanim or not. So certainly, so the offspring should be pagum, should be disqualified. So now the Gemara, we touched up the Braisa. So the Braisa, even though it's following Rabbi Yeshua, was an Amamzerim, but still they would want to crack in his skull because of the gum. So now the Gemara has another question. Kabami need sarod, kabashli b'nei sarod. So it shifts gears because if you look at the Braisa, in the beginning of the Braisa, they say, Shalut Rabbi Yeshua, Tzarat HaBat Mahu. What's the status of Tzarat HaBat, the co-wife of the daughter? That's what they're asking. And then he, in his answer, starts talking about the whole later Mishpacha, the descendants of the Tzara. So the Gemara says, Tarti Kaboy Mine. So they were really asking two questions of Rabbi Yeshua. First is Tzarot Mai. What's the halacha with the tzarot? Are they allowed to marry or not without yibam and chalitza? And if you're assuming arguendo, the halacha follows Beit Hillel, the tzarot are free to go and marry whoever they want without anything. The nate tzarot, and here the Bach has, where's the Bach? He says, yeah, the nate tzarot to Beit Hillel, the Beit Shammai mahu. So what are the descendants of these sorrows according to Beit Shammai? In other words, so according to Rabbi Yeshua, the tzara of the bat can marry whoever she wants. And then she marries somebody. So, but according to Beit Shammai, she requires chalitza. She didn't do chalitza. What would the offspring, what would be the status of the offspring? So the Gemara says, Lamai nachmina. So what's the nachmina? If we're passing like Beis Hillel, so who cares what Beit Shammai says? So the Gemara says, "Lamifshat v'lad machzir v'ushtol Beit Hillel." So the Gemara says, we want to extrapolate from Beit Shammai. In other words, If she remarries somebody, according to Beit Shammai, she needs to do chalitza. She's not doing chalitza. So she's going to transgress a lav, lo tia isha made a chalitza li zar. So what's the status, according to Beit Shammai, of those offspring? Not that we're so concerned about Beit Shammai, because Allah is like Beit Hillel, but we could extrapolate that issue to another issue that does involve Beit Hillel, which is what? And that would be Maxir Grushato, the Beit Hillel. It means, let's say somebody divorced their wife, and then the wife remarried somebody, and then they remarried the wife and against halakha, what would be the status of those two children? Because that would also be an Easter law. It says, the first husband's not allowed to marry her again, but he did marry her again. So we want to borrow and extrapolate, like just like Beit Shammai holds with the, you know, with it's called Yibama Lashuk. Just like Beit Shammai holds with Yibama Lashuk, so then we could extrapolate that halacha for this case. So Mi Karmin and Kavachomer. So now here's the Gemara spells out the Kavachomer. Would we say, as a result of that union where a person, you know, illegally remarried his divorced wife that had remarried and got divorced or death or whatever? So Mi Karmin and Kavachomer. Almana the Kohen Gadol Shani Sur Shabbakol. Just like the Almana for Kohen Gadol, she's only prohibited on one person in the world. That's the Kohen Gadol, but not Pagum. But if she has a union with the Kohen Gadol, so the offspring is Pagum, he's a Halal, Zushi Yisro Shaveh Bekol, this one, that's Yisro Shaveh Bekol, so here with the Grusha, means like she can marry anybody, not a Kohen, but she can marry anyone in the world, Eno Din Shabana Pagum, so certainly the offspring would be Pagum. No, so Pagum means that, again, so we did this already, so Pagum means that if they have a daughter, the daughter is not allowed to marry Mishpachat Kuhuna. In other words, that's the Begima. And then if that would be the Begam. If Grusha, it's already the problem with that. But with the daughter, would the daughter be prohibited to marry Mishpachat Kuhuna? He said, and also, would it impact on her, let's say, her right to Truma? Let's say she's a Bat Kohen, and she wants to, you know, eat truma. So would it impact on her right to continue to eat truma? Let's see in a minute. She says, Zushi Sureshav Abakol, and Odinish Badan Pagum. So do I say that's it? He says, Odilma Hikla Mithrach. Or maybe I could distinguish between the two cases. Mala Almana, she asked from it Halalit. But the Almana with the Kohen Gadol, the Almana, if she marries the Kohen Gadol, the taint extends to her, meaning now, she, the Almana, can never marry another Kohen because she had married the Kohen Gadol in violation of Halacha. She's permanently barred from marrying any Kohen. Says Va'amar, in other words, but this woman who would remarry her first husband, she's not Asra, I mean, Kohenim she can't marry, but she's not Asra and anybody else in the world. And in addition to which, Rashi explains that if she's not married to the husband number two and she's a Bar Kohen, then she can still continue to eat truma. But Amar Lahu, and so he, in answer to these two questions, he, Rabbi Shu, says to them, Sarot, as far as the Sarot are concerned, so now we've kind of narrowed down the Sarot, what is their status? Are they allowed to marry? Mityareani, I'm afraid to say. Mityareani, the halacha is like, in other words, because the Beit Shammai b'nei chai v'krito. In other words, I'm afraid to say that they. In other words, if I say that Sarah is allowed to marry someone else without Yibam or Chalitza, it means that the Sarah to Beit Shammai are chiyuv karei. You're asking me what halacha is with the Sarah. So I'm afraid to say, because now we're saying differently than we said before. Before we said, I'm afraid like the kids are going to crack my head open. But now I'm afraid to say, because of the women, the tzarot, according to Beit Shammai, that had done Yibam. So I'm really saying, in essence, that they're a chayiv karet. So I'm afraid to say, they're going to crack my skull open. Because if I'm going to say the tzarot can just marry whoever they want, I'm saying they're not allowed to marry the brother. So that's a chayiv karet. So I'm afraid to say that. And then on the top line, on Kitzayim and Aleph, the Neit Tzarot, as far as the children of the Tzarot, he says, according to Beit Hillel, he asked me, you know, behold the kabayitu imhim pegumim, are they pagum? He says, ani ma'id lachem. So I'm giving you testimony that there, that the families were coming in gedolim. In other words, the families, the tzara married people without doing yibam or chalitza, and we said, but according to Beit Shammai, they would be chayv to do chalitza because they're violating the law. So I'm giving testimony that the sons were kohen and gedolim. Now, the only thing I was wondering was, so why is Beit Shammai not upset about that? In fact, I'm going to go back again. So he says that Beit Shammai didn't, this is in footnote 2 on page 16a, Beit Shammai did not protest the appointment of these kohen and gedolim. He says that even according to Beit Shammai, the co-wife of an heir marries without the benefit of chalitza, her children are not disqualified from the kuna. For if they were, the co-wife's sons from a kohen would not be eligible to serve as kohen. As noted above, some kohen maintain that according to Rashi, even the co-wife married to a kohen, her sons would not be disqualified in any event. In their view, Rashi's point is that the daughters of the co-wife must have been allowed to marry kohen, otherwise their sons would be ineligible. Anyway, so the point is that the Shammai signs off that the descendants of the Sarod are eligible for the Kuna Gedola. All right, so where does this leave us? So we did have some rayas that Beit Shammai did follow their own shito. That's what we learned in the sugya. And any questions, comments, thoughts? All right, so the Kavachomer would go like this. We had in two situations. One was with the with a regular marriage, like if the tsaro marries somebody without going through chalitza, so what would be the status of the offspring if she needs chalitza but didn't have chalitza? So the kavachomer would say that the children are pekumim. Kavachomer would say, in other words, the gemara was mesupak whether there's a good kavachomer or not, but the kavachomer would lead me to the conclusion that the offspring are tainted. And the Kavachomer goes like this. If an almana to a Kohen Gadol, so the almana is only permitted in one person in the world, and that's the Kohen Gadol. But if she has relations with the Kohen Gadol, the offspring is pagum. It's clearly pagum. So here, if you assume that this woman he says, so her Easter is when all the brothers, because she's Eshadach, right? So, but wait a second, wait, I'm losing it here with this. Yeah, but I'm saying, So what's the case with this? So this is one second, then we go back one second. Widow. What is she doing? One second. Oh no, it's the other way around. Right. In other words, in other words, Rabbi Yeshua Paskins that it's not Mamzeris, but if she has relations, according to Rabbi Yeshua, in other words, Rabbi Yeshua is passing like Beis Hillel, but if, what would Rabbi Yeshua say about the union between the Tzara and one of the surviving brothers? That's the issue. Okay, so the Gemara says, I could say that the offspring is tainted. In other words, if she has relations, in other words, even according to Rabbi Yeshua, the offspring is not going to be Mamzerim, but the offspring could be Pagumim, tainted. And I'll learn it out from the Amana to a Kohen Gadol. So the Amana is only permitted to one person in the world, the Kohen Gadol. She has relations with the Kohen Gadol, the offspring is tainted. This woman is prohibited to all the surviving brothers, and she has with one of the surviving brothers, so certainly the offspring will be tainted. That was the way the problem went. Okay, I think there's going to be, okay, Rafi's got a question, that's it. So if he marries the almana, so if I think that he like, I assume it's like a grusha, like if a Kohen marries a grusha, so he becomes a halal until he divorces her, and then he, in the halacha, he's got... No, let's go. I'm analogizing. We don't have Kohen and Gedolim, but I'm saying, let's say a regular Kohen cannot marry a grusha. Let's say a Kohen marries a grusha. So he forfeits all his rights of kahuna until and unless he divorces her, does tshuva, and takes a neder that he's going to keep the dinim of kahuna. Then he goes back. So I would assume that in this case, this is a way to go back. Okay, let me end the recording. One second.